now in session. The great Karen Conti.
You want answers?
How do you plead? Guilty or not guilty?
She's on TV. She's on the radio.
Oh, guilty, but with a real good excuse.
Oh, yeah, and she's a lawyer.
You can't handle the truth.
Call the first witness.
Pete, do you have a lawyer?
I do, yes.
Not as good as Karen Conti.
No, not at all.
Karen Conti's on Sunday nights, and you can hear Karen Conti on WGN. You still on with Noonan?
I am, from 8 to 9 in the evening.
All right, that's Sunday nights, and you also see her on Fox, you see her on CNN, you see her a lot of places because she never stops working. If we want to call you at the office and tell you the truth about what felons we are, what do we do?
Call me at 312-332-7800.
And the email address?
That's kconti, K-C-O-N-T-I, at kcontilaw.com.
All right, so Pete, the way we do this, Pete McMurray's here because he has nowhere to go because he doesn't have a show all week.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
And by the way, feel free. You're not going to offend me.
Okay.
Karen's my friend. If you ever have an opportunity to have a legal discussion on the show, forget about your fly-by-night attorney, whatever crook you're using. You call Karen and put Karen on the air. She'll set you straight.
I've worked with her before when you were on vacation.
Yeah,
she's great.
There you go. All right, Karen, so people know how we do this. We pick two or three headline stories that you send us. We talk about those, and then we take calls from the felons in the audience who claim it's their brother, their sister, their cousin, and they have a story to tell. 312-981-7200 or texters at 24-720. Public prayer in New York at town council meetings. This is not going to happen, is it?
Yes, it is going to happen. The Supreme Court of the United States said that it is okay for a legislative body to open up its governmental meetings with a prayer. I'm actually very surprised at this ruling, and I'm a little bit concerned about it. I mean, I don't think people hate prayer, and I think most people think that that's not a bad thing. But you know what, Steve? I was just thinking of the analogy. If you are a Christian person and you're a faith, you have faith and you believe in God. And every morning in your government job, there is an atheist prayer that talks about how you shouldn't believe in God,
right,
and that why being an atheist is the way to go. How would you feel every morning being inundated with that prayer or whatever you want to call
it? Wouldn't be good. Would not be good.
I don't think that would be good. I think I would be offended. And that's why I say for even the religious people who do pray and who do go to church, why do you want the government getting into your business and into your religion? Because your religion is very private, whether you're a Muslim, whether you're a Christian, whether you're a Jewish person. It doesn't matter. You need to do that on your own. And the government stepping in, I don't know, that frightens me just a little bit.
One of the things I've learned from you over the years, everything in the law is about precedent. You set a precedent in that seemingly small way, it can come back and bite you in bigger ways. And I would agree with you. And I go to church pretty much every Sunday. But I have no problem praying in the car before I go into a government facility.
Right.
And sometimes that's the right place to pray, right before you go in, especially if it's court.
Right.
But separation of church and state exists for a reason. Pete, you know what I'm talking about?
Why not a moment of silence? Why do they have to have a
moment
prayer?
Of silence where you could say anything you want to say to yourself?
Right. Yes.
I think that would solve a lot. I think it would solve the school issue. I think it would solve all of it. The great thing would be if you could mic up a little kid's head during a moment of silence and just hear what's in their head.
Yeah.
So
nothing to do with religion, I would imagine. Like, what's for lunch and
right.
How cute is the girl next to me?
I got to pee. That would be the thing. All right. So there's this notion, and it seems to be a TV movie of the week notion most of the time, that, you know, a guy commits a crime when he's young. He somehow escapes capture. He lives a life under a different identity, but he does the right thing, and he tries to live his life fairly and rightly. Somewhere down the road, he gets caught. Does he go to jail? Is that the end of the movie? Or has he done enough where maybe the conviction is thrown out? What's the answer?
Well, in this case, in this guy, I forgot what city it's in, but he does a crime. He does his robbery. And for
St. Charles, Missouri, a suburb of St. Louis.
Missouri. Yeah, for some clerical reason, they don't put him in jail. He even asks about it. He has his lawyer, what's going on? Why am I not going in for my sentence? 13 years later, they finally realize it. How they realize it, I have no idea. And now he faces, you know, being in jail for 13 years. And interestingly, I think very correctly, the judge said, listen, you know, it wasn't your mistake. You weren't fleeing from the law. You know, we just made a mistake. And you did what most prisons do not do. You have rehabilitated. You have a family. You have a job. You have a business. You're a law-abiding citizen. You pay taxes. You've done nothing to follow the law. You know what? We're going to let you go. And I'm a little surprised at that, but I think that's probably, in this case, a very good outcome.
It was convicted of taking part in a robbery at a Burger King back in 1999. There was, I don't know if there was a gun involved. No one was injured in the burglary. But as you said, he even looked into, hey, shouldn't you guys be picking me up? You know, shouldn't you pick me up? I should probably be in jail by now. And no one did. I'm conflicted by this one. Because to me, Pete, I don't know about you, to me it seems like just, again, a precedent to send a message. And maybe even a message to his family, his neighbors, his kids, who all know about this now, to do the right thing. Maybe you give him 3 months. You know, some sort of thing to send him away for the crime he did commit. I don't know.
He turned around his life. He turned around his life, and he was, when they arrested him, he was taking care of his kids. He was making them breakfast, and the SWAT team came to his house.
Right.
He's completely turned around his life, and he's, you know, he's rehabilitated. Why wouldn't you give him a second chance?
So you and Karen, are all voting me on this?
I agree with Karen.
I think
yes.
the difference here is that he did not purposely evade, okay?
Right.
If he was on the lam and he was doing, then, yes, you can't encourage people to run and to create a new identity and run from the law. This guy did not create a new identity. He was using his name. He was sitting out there in the community doing nothing other than, you know, looking behind his back just to make sure no one was going to arrest him. But, I mean, I do think the judge made a good point here, which is he did rehabilitate. And, you know, prisons aren't very good at that. They're supposed to be doing that. They're supposed to be making the people inside not want to go back in again and give them skills. But we all know prisons don't do that. And this guy rehabilitated himself. I know. I like the end of the story.
So one more, and then we'll take your calls again, 312-981-7200 or texters at 24720. We had a case out in Wyoming, North Dakota, where a judge basically blamed the girl for being involved with, I think it was a teacher. There was a sexual assault. The guy basically got no sentence. That case is being retried, revisited. The judge is possibly going to lose his seat on the bench. In amidst all of this, now there's a new story out of Texas where a judge is under fire for a rape sentence for possibly implying the victim was promiscuous. What do we know about this?
Well, in this case, it was a female judge, which is interesting. There was a guy who was, I believe he was young. He was a classmate of the girl. The girl was 14. He was, I think, I don't know, 19 or something.
20.
And so it was rape. They decided it was rape. But the judge said, listen, this little 14-year-old had 3 sex partners and had already given birth. This is not a typical case. And even though he used excessive force and he didn't stop when she said stop, we're going to go easy on you. We're going to give you 45 days, 5 years probation. And my favorite is we're going to give you community service where you have to serve it in a rape crisis center.
I agree with that. But this is an outrageous sentence, and I think it's dangerous. Because I don't care if it's the biggest whore in town. No is no. You can't. If you ever go back on no means no, then all bets are off.
Absolutely right. It just showed, I think, you know, a real prejudice even among women of focus on the victim instead of the act and the crime. And again, if it was consensual, I think I would even feel a little bit different about it, even though that's against the law too. But this was forceful rape. And, you know, community service, the rape crisis hotline, the rape people said, we don't do that. We don't put rapists in our center. This
right.
is for victims. I mean,
right.
this just showed across the board insensitivity to the issues.
Yeah, and at 14, look, if she'd been pregnant twice at 14, that doesn't show she's making adult decisions.
Right.
That shows she's making
right.
terrible decisions.
That's right.
So that's a disappointing thing. All right, we got a couple of questions. When we come back, we'll get as many in as we can. Stand by and hold on, Karen Conti. More with Pete McMurray taking over the Steve Cochran Show. Obviously, there's a plan on 720 WGN. Steve Cochran Show number 162. By the way, we got to put this somewhere where people can see it. We've got a new, very elaborate numbering system. So for people watching on the stream, they'll be able to see exactly what show it is.
So you've played a full baseball season.
I got a ring card girl to walk this around.
There's a smudge on the top part.
There's a smudge on the show?
There's a smudge on the show.
It's an erase board from Walgreens.
Yes,
a whiteboard.
Yes.
Yes,
it is.
Yeah.
Karen Conti standing by, legal guru, expert, tremendous, longtime friend of the show and friend of mine. And Karen, again, phone number at the office.
312-332-7800 or email me. Sometimes that's better. We can put all the facts in there, and I can maybe give you a quick referral.
Sure.
KContiLaw.com.
Before we get to Cheryl, again, let me reintroduce Pete McMurray. He doesn't have any shows this week, so he's hanging around here and sucking up to Karen Conti.
I'd say that's called loitering.
Loitering.
Yes, I like that. I like Cheryl.
Loitering.
Yep. That's my legal opinion. Yep.
All right, Cheryl's on the phone. What's your question for Karen, Cheryl?
Hi, Karen. Hi, Steve.
Hi,
Cheryl.
My brother, who was a resident of Denver, passed away.
Sorry to hear that.
And thank you. And his pension investments show his ex-wife is the beneficiary. However, his divorce decree stipulates neither can claim the other's pension. Will the funds be distributed to her? I have notified the fund, the investment company, of the situation, and they have asked for a letter of instructions.
Okay, Cheryl, let me just, I'm not sure I heard it, but did you say that in the divorce decree, the pension does not go to the ex-wife?
That's correct. It stipulates neither my brother nor her could claim the other's pension.
Okay. So here's it, and I'm not a lawyer in Colorado, so I'm going to be giving you advice, or not really giving you advice, giving you some instruction that would be an Illinois rule. After people get divorced and there's an issue with pension, let's just say that I'm entitled to half of my husband's pension, my lawyer will put together what we call a quadro, qualified domestic relations order, and that goes on to the pension. And it directs the pension company to do whatever the divorce decree says. Now, in this case, obviously that nothing was done because there was no right to a pension, and he didn't change the beneficiary. In my opinion, I believe the divorce decree is going to control. And what you'll probably have to do, if it's worth it, and it probably sounds like it is to get a lawyer to go in to the divorce court or go into some court. Get a court order that directs the pension company to do the right thing here, because they're going to be conflicted. They're going to have the documentation from the divorce. They're going to have the beneficiary paperwork, and they're not going to know what to do, and they don't want to make the wrong.
In Illinois, what would supersede?
The divorce decree would supersede. But again, we would have had maybe some other steps taken after that to secure that.
It's an interesting question, right? Because it's got to come up all the time.
It does, and that's why we have these quadros. That's why you make sure that you have these entrants, so the pension companies or whoever sets these things up, sometimes it's unions, they need to know exactly what to do.
I've long thought that life insurance companies, when they say a life insurance, there ought to be literally a template of the paperwork you need when you die. So not only are you setting your family up for the financial end, you're also... All right, quickly, one more from the 847. I work as an ER nurse. We have people who get narcotics in ER all the time, and they always say, no, it's okay, I have a ride. But then we see them driving off after getting Dilaudid or Vicodin. My question is, like a bartender, do I, as a health professional, who knowingly lets a person under the influence drive and get in an accident, have any liability? It's a huge problem. We see it every day.
That's very interesting. I would say the answer is yes. I would say that you are held to a very high standard when you're a professional, whether you're a doctor or a nurse in an ER situation or, you know, in a hospital, and that if you know and you have reason to believe that person really is going to drive, I even think that, the rules in the hospital are pretty strict that you don't allow people to drive home, no matter what. So if you're violating your hospital's own internal policy, I think that that's going to be negligence. And so I think that not only are you going to be negligent, but your hospital or your doctor's office will be negligent as well.
I may be reading through too much into the text, but it seems to be the texture is indicating that that's not the policy and it's a judgment call. And it would seem that it would be more important that the hospital get their act together and not allow it to be a judgment call and just make it a policy.
Well, right, but if it says on your Vicodin bottle, do not drive, do not operate a machinery or a car when you're taking it, and you give the person Vicodin, they aren't supposed to drive. And if you know they are, I would say that you have a duty to do something about it.
Well, good for this person for reaching out, right?
Yeah, good for you.
When do you want again, Sunday night?
Sunday night from 8 to 9.
Well, hope you and your new best friend Pete have a good time.
Yes, and stop loitering and
love hearing you, Karen.
I guess.
You're the best.
All right, Karen. Talk to you later.
Okay, bye. Have a good day.
Greg, Karen County. Listen weekday mornings at 7:20 for your chance to win the daily $720 money clip on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago.